You can meet and hear Matt Walsh, Ross Douthat, Carol Tobias, Matt Harrison, Hans Feeney, Wesley Smith, Will Whedon, Jonathan Fisk, and Tom Korchak at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Registration is $125. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here with leaders from across the country and all around the world who are all united by a shared belief in the glory of God and the power of prayer.
I believe that God is love, which is more accurate than saying that love is God. God is the epitome of love. He defines what love is.
No, not so, dear brother. I did not point you down that path so that baptism should grant the liberty to sin. Quite the opposite.
To stray from God's created order and God's created design then becomes a direct attack on the triune God of love in whose image we are made.
Southern Illinois bird watchers love Issues, etc.
We talk about the sexual revolution, and it's been so much more than a revolution. Revolutions, they come, they go, more or less trying to reinvent the wheel in their own image, and then largely they fade away. They become very institutionalized. The revolutionary nature of the revolution goes away, and it just becomes another government, another set of politics. The sexual revolution is different. It remains a revolution because it really has no goal except, I guess you could call it, chaos. What is the opposite of God's created order in this world? Man, woman, husband, wife, children, family. What's the opposite of that? Chaos at the most elemental level. And when your goal is chaos, you're never done with the revolution. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, May the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. The sexual revolution will be the subject with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse here in the first hour of today's program. Then we're going to have Dr. Arthur Just lead us in a teaching on Jesus on the road to Emmaus. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's senior research fellow for economics at the Acton Institute and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State. Let's listen to her presentation from the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Making the Case Against the Sexual Revolution.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So, you know what? The reading that we had talked about Jesus' high priestly prayer, where he prayed to his Father that we may all be one. And I tell you, that is a dear prayer to me as a Roman Catholic speaking here in a Lutheran congregation. I believe that the Holy Spirit is at work driving us together, those of us who support the traditional biblical morality. We have more in common with one another than we do often with the other members of our own denominations. And so it's a pleasure and a privilege for me to be here with my dear brothers and sisters in Christ with the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church. So thank you so much for the invitation. I'm just delighted to be able to be here. So if you want to be part of the Ruth Institute, if you too can be part of a hate group, you can do one of two things. You can sign this clipboard going around, which signs you up for our newsletter, which I know a lot of you are already on our newsletter. And then, or you can just go to Facebook and like our Facebook page. You could do that right now with your phone. It won't hurt my feelings. Just go to your Facebook app and like us on Facebook, and then you'll know what we're doing. You know, we'll know what we're up to. And so today, as Todd mentioned, I'm going to talk with you about the sexual revolution, making the case against the sexual revolution. I hope I don't fall off a log in the process, but yes, I could more or less give this talk. I've given this talk a lot of times, and I'll allude to that as we go along. There are three major points that I want to make for you today. Number one, I want to talk with you about what the sexual revolution is. I've broken this down into three pretty easy to remember things that I think cover the ground of the whole kind of cultural toxic mess that we're in. Number two, I want to talk with you about what is the end game of the sexual revolutionaries. People ask me this all the time. Dr. Morse, where is this going to end? You know, it seems like it's so crazy and it's going so fast. Where does this stop? And so I'm going to talk with you about the end game of the sexual revolution. And then finally, we're going to talk about what we're going to do about it. And I don't care who you are, how old you are, how young you are, what your denomination is, what you think you can or can't do, there is something for everyone to do about this current cultural mess. So let's dive right in and talk about what is the sexual revolution. I define the sexual revolution as having three components, and I call them, they're three interlocking ideologies, all right? And I'm going to go through these briefly. I don't have a huge amount of time to go into them in detail, but I'm going to tell you basically what they are, all right? So the first, and before I do that, we need to understand the sexual revolution is not a thing of the left. It is not a thing of the right. It is an ideology all on its own, a freestanding ideology. And it has, like all of the other toxic ideologies of the 20th century, it is a fantasy ideology. Now, what do I mean when I say it's a fantasy ideology? I mean it is something that people believe because they like the way it makes them feel, and they believe it in spite of the evidence. You could call it a superstition, okay? Something we believe because we like the way it makes us feel to believe it, but we believe it in spite of all of the evidence. That's a fantasy ideology. And you'll see as we go through here, these three interlocking ideologies that make up the sexual revolution are indeed fantasy ideologies. But the fact that it is irrational and untrue should not make you let down your guard. The fact that it is irrational and untrue does not mean that people are going to, the people are not deadly serious about implementing it. In fact, that's what makes it so dangerous. What makes it dangerous is that people believe they have a high moral duty to create this fantasy world, which cannot be done. All right? This is what the communists thought. This is what the fascists thought. They thought it was possible to create this dream world, and the fact that they couldn't really do it didn't really slow them down. Okay, so that's what we're dealing with the sexual revolution. So here we go. Here are the three parts of the sexual revolution. Number one, they believe that a good and decent society should do everything possible to separate sex from babies. Separate sex from babies. Do you all recognize this is a fact of our lives here? Okay, I call that the contraceptive ideology. Number two, they believe that a good and decent society should do everything possible to separate both sex and babies from marriage. Okay, separate both sex and babies from marriage. You don't need to be married in order to have sex. You don't need to be married in order to have a baby. You don't need to have sex with a baby. You can have a baby without having sex. Okay. The beginning of the sexual revolution, some of you are old enough to remember this, we all thought it was going to be a lot of fun to have sex without babies. Now we're at the point where we're having babies without sex, which I'm pretty sure is not as much fun as the old-fashioned way. But we are still deeply committed to this thing, okay, having babies without having sex. So that, I call that the divorce ideology. Because why? Marriage is the institution that connects mothers and fathers to their children and to one another. And if you start to say that can separate both sex and babies from marriage, what you're really saying is that kids don't really need their parents. And that people can substitute out parents at will and nothing bad's going to happen. Okay, that's part of what I call the divorce ideology. So that's point two. Point three of the sexual revolution is what I call the gender ideology. The gender ideology holds that the sex of the body is not really anything significant. The sex of the body is not really anything significant. In its early form, it was feminism. And the claim was that men and women are completely interchangeable, right? And so the fact that I'm a woman and you're a man has nothing to do with anything significant. And many public policies were built around this premise, that male and female was not particularly significant. Well, now that ideology has morphed, it has moved along. That ideology, by the way, went into society pretty much unimposed, unopposed, right? And it just kind of slash through society, knocking things down, including things like father-daughter dances, which are held to be inappropriate sexual stereotyping. All kinds of things went down, including strength requirements for law enforcement and the military. You're changing the physical requirements for those kinds of responsibilities, which really actually do require some kind of upper body strength. Okay, that ideology went through society unopposed. And so now it has morphed into something new, which is transgenderism. The idea that the sex of the body is so insignificant that you can change it at will. That you can change your sexual identity, your gender identity, by a combination of technology, hormones, and a whole lot of social support. If you're a man, you can now be a woman. If you're a woman, you can now be a man. Both of these things, they seem to be different, but what they have in common is the idea that the sex of the body is unimportant. And can be, at first we were saying it's all culturally constructed and therefore can be reconstructed, right? And now we're saying it's not only culturally constructed, it can be personally reconstructed by any individual. And we'll have society set up so that you can be supported in whatever your gender ideology might be. All right? So that's called the gender ideology. Now, these three interlocking ideologies, there's a lot I could say about each one of them. And in fact, I have given 45-minute talks on each one of them. So last year, I spoke at the Acton Institute convention. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Acton Institute. The Acton Institute is a free market organization, basically. And I gave a talk on each one of these three ideologies at the Acton Institute. And so you can go to the Ruth Institute podcast series and look for those three 45-minute talks. You can get the whole talk. And also, along with it, where you download the podcast, there's also the PowerPoint slides that go along with it. And so you can follow along with the slides and you know, see the references that I have and all of that. So if you're interested in any one of these three things, the contraceptive ideology, the divorce ideology, the gender ideology, you can hear 45 minutes about each one and become convinced, if you're not already, that these are a significant part of the society in which we live and have a significant part to play in creating the kind of toxic ideology, the toxic sexual soup that everybody's swimming in, that all of our kids are swimming in, all right? So let me go back and say just a few words about each one of these three. First of all, let's say a word about the contraceptive ideology. Now, you all know I'm a Roman Catholic, and it has come to, the society has come to believe that contraception is a Catholic thing. Everybody else accepts it as a done deal. What I want to just point out to all of you is that up until 1930, all of the Christian denominations believed exactly the same thing about contraception, which is that it was against natural law and against the law of God, okay? And the change came only in 1930 with the Lambeth Convention of the Anglican Church holding for the first time that a married couple with serious reasons could use artificial contraception to space their pregnancies. What you may not know, and what I know only because of the research of a very fine Lutheran scholar named Alan Carlson. If you don't know Alan Carlson, he's a good person for you to know, and I'm sure that he's been interviewed on Issues, Etc. more than once. Alan Carlson discovered when he researched this, because he knew, as a Lutheran, he knew his heritage that Luther was against contraception and Calvin was against contraception, so what in the world happened here? What he discovered was, you guessed it, the grand dame of contraception herself, Margaret Sanger, was over behind the scenes manipulating and whispering to the people at the Anglican convention, at the Lambeth convention. And in addition to that, she was working the public relations side of the fence to make contraception into a Catholic-only issue. And why was she doing that? She was trying to drive a wedge in the church, using something that has been latent in American life and sometimes not so latent in American life, which is anti-Catholicism. She was feeding that and feeding off of that historic anti-Catholicism. And so she made it look like a Catholic issue, which is what it remains to this very day, is that people believe it's a Catholic issue. So I just put that out there for you to have that little bit of background. And I'm not today going to give you a theological talk about why Catholics hold this position. There are people better qualified than I to do that. But what I do want to do is call your attention to the ways in which contraception has, to just what contraception has done to this culture.
We're listening to Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute make the case against the sexual revolution from the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. When we come back, we'll talk about the contraception ideology.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
For a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are listening to Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse make the case against the sexual revolution for the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. She takes up the subject of the contraception ideology.
The contraceptive ideology is different from the availability of contraception, the mere availability of contraception. Sometimes people will say, well, the pill changed everything. Well, let's think about that for a minute. Where did this pill come from? Did it just sweep into society like Hurricane Harvey? I mean, what was this thing? Well, in fact, somebody had to think of the pill. Somebody had to develop the pill. Somebody had to pay somebody to develop the pill. Somebody then had to test the pill, as a matter of fact, using methods that were not usually used for testing the pill, using much less scrupulous methods for testing this pill on poor Puerto Rican women, and then somebody had to promote it. Somebody had to get the government to promote it. All of these things took place through human agency and not just through some kind of force of nature. So we've all heard this so many times, haven't we, that the pill changed everything. The fact is that statement is a kind of propaganda designed to divert your attention from all of the human agency that was really going on all along. All right? And it's still going on. all along. We have decisions about what to do with this technology, don't we? We have decisions about whether to use it and how to use it and what to say about it and so on and so forth. But let me just point out this one thing. What the contraceptive ideology does is it tells people that everyone old enough to give meaningful consent is entitled to the sexual activity that they want. That's what the contraceptive ideology is really all about. Everyone old enough to give meaningful consent is entitled to have the sexual activity that they want. And it's the government's job to minimize the inconvenience associated with that. Okay? That's where we are today. That's where we are today. All right? So that, I think on that point, Catholics and Lutherans are of one mind that this is irrational. It cannot happen, and we should not be trying to make it happen. And if you just let your mind think about this for a while, just let this percolate, because I'm sure this is a new thought for a lot of you. But just think about it. If you really have this sense of entitlement, then you need abortion as a backup plan, don't you? Right, you need abortion. You know, if you look at statistics, a lot of times people will show, various people collect these statistics, that any given group of women who present themselves for abortion, the most recent statistics come from the United Kingdom, almost 50% of them were using some form of contraception the month that they got pregnant. All right. So if you buy the contraceptive ideology that you get to do whatever you want, you're sleeping with somebody you shouldn't be sleeping with, who'd be a disaster to be a parent with for whatever reason, one of the choices you have now is abortion or becoming a single parent or placing the child for adoption. Those are your choices now. Or you marry the knucklehead, right? Which is increasingly what people don't do. Right? And they give up on that and they go to the other options. So that's what I want to say about the contraceptive ideology. Now I want to speak to you a moment about the divorce ideology. And I've learned from experience talking about the divorce ideology that this part of the talk can be upsetting for people. Because I know that there are people in this room in one of two categories, or possibly both. One is, I am sure, in a room of 300 people, that there are people whose parents were divorced. And of those whose parents were divorced, there are some of you who never really got over it. And I'm going to talk about it. And I'm going to talk about it in a way you might not have heard people talk about it before. But I want you to know, I know that this is painful for you. And you are entitled to feel your pain. I am not going to tell you that you'll get over it. You're old enough to know now that you're not going to get over it, aren't you? You know that now. Okay, so the other group that may be out here in a room this size is there may be people that I call the reluctantly divorced. You ever heard that term, the reluctantly divorced? We made that term up at the Ruth Institute. We invented that term. The reluctantly divorced person is the person who wanted to stay married, but their spouse wanted to end the marriage. And because of no-fault divorce, the government takes sides with the person who wants the marriage the least. That's the law. That's what no-fault divorce means. It means the government's taking sides with the person who wants the marriage the least. And as soon as I use this term reluctantly divorced, I bet you a lot of you know somebody who's in that category. But you never heard this label before, because it's very important that these people not be too visible, because they disrupt the fantasy ideology. You see, the fantasy ideology around divorce is that divorce is really a pretty harmless thing. The kids will get over it. The kids will be fine. And it's probably all for the best for the adults anyway, because after all, if they're unhappy, moving on to the next partner will surely make them happy. Right? One time I said something like that in a room full of family law attorneys. I said, you know, people get divorced because they think that getting divorced will end the conflict. And you know what that room full of family law attorneys did? They laughed out loud. Why did they laugh out loud? Because most of their business is in managing post-divorce conflict. Tremendous amount of post-divorce conflict. Okay? So what I want you to do now is to take this brochure that I gave to everyone, this one that says, "Do you know a survivor of the sexual revolution?" Do you know a survivor of the sexual revolution? This is a rhetorical question because everyone knows someone who's a survivor of the sexual revolution. When you open it up on the very first panel and you run your eye and your finger down this first column, what you'll see are 12 different groups of survivors of the sexual revolution, groups that we've identified at the Ruth Institute as being somebody who has been harmed by one of these toxic ideologies or the interplay among them. And so you'll see right at the very top, children of divorce. Children of single parents, reluctantly divorced, reluctantly single parents, heartbroken career women, just one after another of heartbroken, wounded people, in some cases with guilty consciences along with broken hearts. And then when you open it up, you'll see over this column it says, "Is this what you were told?" And that column, I would say, is basically the list of cultural lies that we tell about ourselves, that we tell ourselves. Right at the very top of the list, kids are resilient. The number one lie of the sexual revolution, kids are resilient. You look down a little bit further, let's say, for example, the second from the bottom, cohabitors with regrets. Have you ever heard anybody say that people regret living with their boyfriend? You as parents have probably seen your loved ones get married, you know, move in with their boyfriend, you think, oh my God, what is she doing? What is he doing? Right? You can see it in other people. But has anyone ever measured how many people regret their cohabitation? No. No one has ever even asked that question, how many there are. Anyway, so here we are with the lies about that. Cohabiting is as good as marriage, maybe better. No one ever feels that they wasted years of their lives cohabiting with somebody who turned out not to be marriage material. Anybody know anybody like that? Yeah. All these people are socially invisible. And it's very important that they stay socially invisible. Because as soon as they start talking, the whole thing crumbles. Right? The whole edifice of lies starts to fall apart. Let's now say just a few more words about the... Oh, so let me say one more thing about the divorce ideology before I move on. We at the Ruth Institute also have pamphlets about some of these survivors where we have put into a pamphlet about this size some of the research that's been done on the harms to people associated with being, for example, a child of divorce, the risk factors associated with being a child of divorce, all right? And what I want to say about the children of divorce is just this. We ask something that is almost impossible of them. For instance, we're told to tell kids, mom and dad are getting divorced. We still love you. Both of us, we still love you so much, but we just don't love each other anymore. Now, here's the problem with that from the child's perspective. From the child's perspective, both parents are half of who they are. So you're telling me you love me, but you don't love half of me. How does that work? They can't make it work because it isn't really true. See, they can't make it work. And so in their little minds, they're trying to work this out. It can't be worked out. It's a kind of cognitive dissonance. And then their life begins where they're told, this is all going to be fine. You're going to live with dad part of the time. You're going to live with mom part of the time. And every time they move, there is some disruption, not only physical disruption to their lives, but they have the sense that they don't really have a home in either one of those places, as particularly if there's remarriage involved. Now, what about remarriage? Wasn't there a guy who told us something about not remarrying after divorce? Who is that guy?
Next in Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse's presentation at the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, she'll talk about divorce and remarriage and its effect on the family. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Why the Public Square Needs Christianity, Progressivism, Joyfully Lutheran, Planned Parenthood, The Lord's Supper, The Hippocratic Oath, Lutheran Education, Christian Hope. Some of your favorite guests will address these topics at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org, the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago.
Come, Holy Spirit, Lord and Comforter, with words of truth our feeble faith assure. These words open Mark Preuss's new Pentecost hymn for the Lutheran Church, available exclusively in the Lutheran Witness. Grab the May issue of the Missouri Synod's flagship magazine and dig into what the Bible and Lutheran theology have to say about the Holy Spirit, who He is, how He works, and what He wants for your life. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Are you looking for a confessional Lutheran church in southeast Oakland County, Michigan, just north of Detroit? Ascension of Christ Lutheran has been proclaiming the gospel and administering the sacraments since 1951. Ascension of Christ Lutheran is also a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Join us for the divine service every Sunday at 10:15 a.m. in Beverly Hills, Michigan. You can also find us on the internet at ascensionofchrist.org.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida. St. Paul Lutheran, Council Bluffs, Iowa. Bethany Lutheran, Fairview Heights, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Ascension of Christ Lutheran, Beverly Hills, Michigan. Trinity Lutheran, Louisville, Minnesota. Village Lutheran, Ladue, Missouri. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas. Zion Lutheran, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at the website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are listening to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse make the case against the sexual revolution from the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. The next subject she wants to deal with is remarriage after divorce and its effect on the family.
Matthew chapter 19, Mark 10. Is this ringing a bell, guys? Okay. Jesus, this guy Jesus, you see, he told us don't remarry after divorce. But so look at the remarriage from the child's perspective. Dad gets remarried, and now he's got new kids with that new family. He's interested in his new wife's children. They have a child together. Oh my gosh, they're both interested in that brand new baby. And here's the child from the original relationship really feeling left behind. And they are kind of left behind. Nobody means for that to happen, but that's what happens. And that's what our Lord knew. He knew what those kids were going to go through when he told us, don't do this. Don't do this. Okay, so that's the divorce ideology. And it's all papered over with, you'll be fine, the kids are fine, oh, you're not fine, we'll take you for therapy. Okay? That's how it's done. That's how it's handled. All right. So third point, gender ideology. Let's go back to the gender ideology. The body has no human significance. Okay. The sex of the body is not particularly significant. A lot of times people will say to me, Dr. Morse, this transgender thing just came up so fast. Where did this come from? What I want to point out to you is that it didn't just come out of nowhere. They've been trying to degender everybody for a long time, okay? And what's going on? These are people who resent the sex of the body. And this is something that is, I think, equally important on both the political left and on the political right. The political left, you know, they're kind of in the middle of it all the time, and so you think, well, this is a left-wing thing. But actually, a lot of people on the right are profoundly uncomfortable with the idea that men and women are different, and that if you want to achieve this important goal of having a child, that you need to cooperation of somebody else to get it done, Radical individualism is not interested in lifelong partnerships, okay? I mean, I don't know if you know people like this, but I know a lot of fiscal conservatives. In my life as a free market economist, I know a lot of these guys. And you can just tell it's making the hair go up on the back of their neck when they think about the fact that having a child means a lifelong commitment to another human being who, by the way, needs to be of the opposite sex, which means they're a little bit freaky. You know, we all know that. People of the opposite sex are mysterious and impossible to understand and so on and so forth. So they're all about surrogacy and baby buying and baby selling and all that. They're fine with that. They're fine with that. So this is all part of the gender ideology. And as you can see, it's accelerating. It's getting stranger and stranger the more it goes on unopposed and uncorrected. So I want to point out to you, before I go to the next step, what is the end game? That's our next step. We've talked about what is the sexual revolution. You can learn more about all three of these components, the contraceptive ideology, the divorce ideology, and the gender ideology. 45-minute talks on each one of them, so you can learn more about them if you want to. Next step is, what's the end game? Before I go to the end game, I want to point out to you that I have a few pamphlets up here that are so hot off the press, I haven't even had a chance to fold them yet, and I don't have enough for everybody. But one of them is called Counting the Casualties of the Sexual Revolution, and I don't know if you can see this fist, you know, this kind of leftist fist smashing the family, smashing the little house there. And on the back, we have just listed some idea of how many people have suffered from all of these categories that are there on the other pamphlet that all of you do have. So if you want to take a look at that, you certainly can. What's the end game? The end game for the contraceptive ideology is population control. That's the end game. Some of these people who talk about freedom and privacy, secretly or not so secretly, just love China. They love that one-child policy. And by the way, don't be misled. The one-child policy has not been rescinded or relaxed. Oh yes, some people can have two children, but you know what? You still need a birth permit to have a child, and that's the key thing. I don't care whether the permit says 1, 2, or 20 on it. The government has no business giving out birth permits. The Chinese birth control police, family planning police, that's a thing. The family planning police in China consists of over 1 million people. There are 1 million people monitoring people's menstrual cycles, knocking down people's houses if they have an illegal child, and all of the rest of the sanctions that are associated with trying to control fertility. It is arguably the largest law enforcement organization in the world, the Chinese Birth Control Police. And there are people in our country, I have absolutely no doubt, there are people in our country who secretly love it. Okay, so for all their chatter about $10 copays for contraception, that's not really what it's all about, right? So you've got to see that. Second point, what's the end game of the divorce ideology? The end game of the divorce ideology is to completely separate biology from legally recognized parenthood. The end game of the divorce ideology is to say that biology is not a particularly significant marker of parenthood. Kids don't really need their own parents. And so the end game, how they're going to get that done, you see that they believe that, right? You can see that, there are people in our world who seriously believe that. The end game of how they're going to get that done is contract parenting. Contract parenting. Bunch of adults get together, write down a little contract, who's going to do what, and that contract, they want it to be legally enforceable. So I'm going to contribute the egg, you're going to contribute the sperm, we're going to hire a third person to be the surrogate, we have a little rule about whether she can be involved or not, we have a little rule about whether the sperm donor's partner can be involved, and so on and so on, and we can have four or five people as part of this contract, and they want that to be legally enforceable. And they already, to some extent, are legally enforceable. That's the end game of the divorce ideology. And who cares what happens to kids? Okay? The end game of the gender ideology. The end game of the gender ideology is to completely remove all legal and social notice of the fact of male and female. to go through the law and remove all gendered language, to remove all gender-specific references, to remove the terms mother and father, husband and wife. And indeed, in California, that has already been done. I woke up one day. I used to live in California. I'm now a refugee from California. I live one state to the east over there in Louisiana. It's a very civilized place. I woke up one day and discovered I no longer had a husband. Now, nothing untoward had happened to Mr. Morse. It's just that our governor, Jerry Brown, had decided to remove the word husband and wife from all the legal codes. So I went to bed with a husband and woke up with a partner, a generic, gender-neutral spouse. Same mother and father, no mother and father, only parents, gender-neutral parents. That's the end game of the gender ideology. And I think you'll agree that this is not really possible to do, right? This is not really possible. You can't really build a whole society around the idea that sex does not make babies. Okay, guys, sex makes babies. Are we all on board with that? Great. Good. Good. Okay, that's an IQ test and an awakeness test. Okay, sex makes babies. Kids need their own parents, and men and women are different. You cannot build a whole society around the opposite of those things. Even if there are some men who are kind of feminine and some women who are kind of masculine, that's not completely irrelevant. Okay? Even if you can manufacture things that make it, that reduce the probability of any particular sex act bringing about a baby, not relevant. That's not relevant. You cannot build a whole society around those three premises. And yet, that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to do. It cannot be done. It is irrational. It is impossible. It is inhuman. And that is why, my friends, the sexual revolution has become a totalitarian ideology. It is a totalitarian ideology, because the only way you can get this done is with a lot of force and a lot of propaganda. You gotta be cranking out that propaganda day and night. You gotta be coming out with children's books. You gotta be coming out with TV shows. You gotta be shutting people up. All you people who are heartbroken over your parents' divorce, you don't get a place at the table. We've got a lot of jolly people who are happy with their third marriages, and by golly, their kids will sit there and nod and say they're happy too. But you don't get a turn.
We're listening to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse make the case against the sexual revolution from the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. If you're enjoying Jennifer's presentation, don't miss the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Chicago. National Right to Life President Carol Tobias will be making the case against Planned Parenthood. Attendance is limited to 500. The one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference begins 2 weeks from today, Friday, June 7th, in Chicago. You'll find a conference schedule, and you can register at issuesetc.org. Next, the totalitarianism of the sexual revolution.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During May, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their ministry of the month, Dakota Boys and Girls Ranch. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian, but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Friday afternoon, May the 24th, we are listening to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute, making the case against the sexual revolution from the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Houston, Texas. She next takes up the subject of the totalitarian nature of the sexual revolution.
That's what we're dealing with. And if you feel that you're being oppressed and weighed down with propaganda and ideology, you're right. You are. That is exactly what is happening to all of us. It is a totalitarian ideology no Christian should have anything to do with. And we have let far too much go on for far too long. And that's why we are where we are today, because we haven't seen really what it was all about. They just want this one little thing. All we want is contraception with married couples with a serious health problem. Really? Really? Now we're giving out condoms to fourth graders and that doesn't bother you? You know? And you never thought of that might happen? You see what I mean? It's always one little thing where we've been pecked to death. We've been pecked to death. So what are we going to do about this, friends? What are we going to do about it? That's part three. What are we going to do about it? Well, the Ruth Institute has a plan. And our plan involves the survivors of the sexual revolution. Our plan is to activate the survivors of the sexual revolution, which probably means everybody here, right? Or everybody here knows somebody who's in one of these categories. And what I mean by activating the survivors of the sexual revolution is that if you've been harmed by any one of these ideas, we need to tell our stories. You know, the people on the other side, how did they get, for example, gay marriage? They have sob stories. That's how they get it done. They have sob stories. And so, and then the reporters are all, and, you know, and then next thing you know, the story comes out, you know, a certain way. Well, guess what? We got sob stories too. We got millions of sob stories. Our sob stories are better than theirs. All right? We got a lot more of them too. All right? So, however, we don't talk about victims. We don't want to get into victimatology. We talk about survivors. Because decent people don't want to be victims forever. Right? We want you to go from being a victim to being a survivor to being an advocate. Being an advocate for positive change. Being an activist. So at the Ruth Institute, we have a couple of programs that we've devised for activating people. up here, I've got a couple more brochures. This one talks a little bit about our programs. This one is our 15-point manifesto for the family. And 9 of the 15 points are things the government should stop doing. Things they never had any business doing in the first place. So you can tell your libertarian friends that we're not imposing anything on them. Okay? No, really. Really, think about it. But anyway, the programs we have, the one I specifically want to talk with you about is what we call our book clubs, the Ruth Institute book clubs, where people can get together, read a curriculum that we've put together. Book is a little bit, e-book. Let's call it e-book. Every session is about 1,000 to 1,500 words of reading, about the length of a Federalist column. And so it's manageable. 4-week sessions on things like the transgender ideology, or divorce, or 101 tips for a happier marriage. Those types of topics. You download the material, you get your friends together, you educate yourselves, and you create a little group of people who can get something done. and who are not going to be silenced. That's the Ruth Institute Book Clubs, and we have a training session, a training webinar coming up for that on November 26th and another one on November 28th. And you just sign up and you come in and we see each other over the web and through the magic of the internet, you know, we get acquainted and we get something done. Okay, so that's the Ruth Institute Book Clubs. Second is something that we call Healing Family Breakdown Spiritual Workshop. The Healing Family Breakdown Spiritual Workshop is designed to help people who have been harmed by some form of family breakdown. It is, as we try to make it as non-political and as non-ideological as possible, and as interfaith as possible, even though up until now, I emphasize up until now, they've always been held at Catholic churches. So we'd love to do one at a Lutheran church, just saying, just hinting. And what it is, it's a morning, it's a half day, and you come and you sit around a table with a bunch of other people. We give a short talk, a little guided meditation, and then some exercises so people can interact with each other and start to make that material their own. Start to heal, start to see that a better way of life is possible. That all of this stuff that's going on that looks like it's all political, it's actually harming everybody's life, right? And it's affected everybody's life. And that's the point that we're trying to get across, and that's the point we're trying to do something to move people out of that space and to help people with that. So those are two of our programs. We also have Tell Ruth the Truth, which is a blog, where people can just go on and anonymously tell their stories about what happened to them. This is what happened to me. No one can argue with you if you say this is what happened to me. We've got people on there who've talked about their experiences with the hookup culture. We've got a lot of children of divorce over there telling what it was like 30 years ago when they saw their dad walk out, or when they saw the police come and take their dad away, or whatever it was. All these things that you never see on a sitcom. Right, that you never see in the mainstream media. We've even had people write in and say, I was the other woman in a divorce case, and I broke up this man's marriage, and we had kids together, and our kid's a mess, and his kid from his first marriage is a mess, and I'm so sorry for what I did. Right? So why do we do that? Well, we're never going to get the traffic that the Huffington Post gets. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe we will someday. Can you guys work on that? Just keep liking and sharing for us, okay? So that those stories are known, so that people can see there's a downside to all of this stuff, right? And also to give some warning signals to people, hey, don't do this. Don't do this crazy thing, all right? I'm going to end with one little story about myself that I often tell at the beginning of these things. And that is, I want to remind those of you who are my age or maybe older, you might remember a song from the 1970s called Torn Between Two Lovers. Do any of you remember that? Look at all you guys. Yeah, we're all revealing our age here, okay? Torn Between Two Lovers. This was a, you know, kind of dorky song, and it was about a woman who was sleeping with two guys, and it was about how she was going to break it to them, you know, that oh, there's someone else that I've loved, and blah, 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 blah. Okay. Sappy, completely sappy song, right? But back in the 70s, I knew people who were dabbling with open marriage. Now, I'm not going to say it was all Mary McGrory's fault or all the fault of that song, but the fact is that's going into your head, along with a lot of other garbage. And I know a lot of people who tried that, including me. I don't know a single person for whom it worked. Not one. Not one. I know of divorces. I know of pregnancies, one of which resulted in a baby being born and therefore the marriage broke up because it's not the wife, you know, kind of problem, kind of thing that happens. I know of abortions. I even know of one suicide. And yet, we still hear people talking about open marriage like it's a brand new thing and nobody's ever thought of it before. And nobody's ever tried it before. Okay? In fact, over in Lake Charles, I heard this song while I'm walking through the grocery store. Lyrics and all. I'm hearing this pro-adultery anthem while I'm picking out my peanut butter, whatever. You know? What is going on here? So that's part of the culture in which we live. All right? And many of you, I just want you to start identifying and noticing the amount of that kind of propaganda that's floating around out there in the ways of, and to start to question it. The last point I'm going to put in your mind is that if we start from the idea that children are owed something, and we have one of these little pamphlets here, yes, this one, the Manifesto for the Family, we talk about what is justice. Justice is to give everyone what they're due. That's the traditional definition of justice. What is due to children? What is due to children is to a relationship with their mother and father, to be loved by their mother and father, and to know their own identity, to know their genetic heritage, their cultural heritage, to know who they are. Every human person has a right to relationship and identity. When these rights are violated, we call that injustice. We call that a structural injustice. We call it family injustice. So I would like to call on all of you, and if you start with that premise, by the way, you guys, if you start with that idea, something is owed to children, and then you reason outward from that and you ask, well, what obligation does that impose on adults and on society? If you reason your way out of that, you will end up with traditional Christian sexual morality, the one that all denominations shared right up until 5 minutes ago, that we all agreed on, right? You will end up with traditional Christian sexual morality. So I call on all of you to become family justice warriors. Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder and president of the Ruth Institute, who taught economics for 15 years at George Mason and Yale University, senior research fellow of economics for the Acton Institute, and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual State, and her presentation at the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Making the Case Against the Sexual Revolution. In Hour 2 of Issues Etc., Dr. Arthur just takes us on to the road to Emmaus, where Jesus finds these two despondent disciples and reveals himself to them through his word. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.